Welcome to Creators Are Brands. I am your host, Tom Boyd. This is the show where we uncover how storytellers are building brands online. In this episode, we talk to my friend, Mitchell Cohen. He is the director of influencer partnerships at AppSumo, which is the digital product marketplace for entrepreneurs. They do over $100 million a year. They're essentially the Amazon for entrepreneurs and people with digital products. And Mitchell is the producer of Noah Kagan's YouTube channel. And Noah is the CEO and founder of AppSumo. He was also number 30 at Facebook and number 4 at Mint. He's someone who consistently shares his practical insights around lessons he's learned as an entrepreneur. And Mitchell leads the team who helps him do that successfully on YouTube. In this episode, we learn how Mitchell landed his job, how he works with influencers, what he's learned from Noah, and how he would approach YouTube if he was starting from scratch. I hope you enjoy this convo just as much as I did. As always, like, subscribe, do all the things, and I'll stop babbling. Let's get into the conversation. I'm so stoked to have you on the show because I feel like whenever we jam out, like, we're like brimming with ideas by the end of the call. So it's going to be fun to actually capture this. So tell me, first off, let's get right into it. Who are you? And if someone were to come up to you at a barbecue and they say, hey, man, what do you do? What do you do for a living? What's your career, man? And you really want to tell them what you do. It's not someone you just want to, like, you know, like give them the short answer. Give them the long answer of like what it is you do and who you are.
First off, what's up, Tom?
What's up, bro? Happy to be here.
Yeah, dude, like you said, it's like we've had these a handful of calls in the past where we're just jamming on stuff. So I feel like that's like one of the things that's your superpower. You just immediately get into it and just talk with people. And I remember the first time we met, I was like, oh, damn, that was dope. I want to hang out with Tom more. So happy to be here and do more of this.
Yeah. And wait, let's talk about I'm interrupting you already. But the first time we talked, it was like a brainstorm session for Noah's YouTube channel.
Yeah, it was. And so let's see. I'll go in order. What do I do at a barbecue? My short answer is always just kind of like marketing at a software company. My medium answer is, I suppose now I'll be director of influencer partnerships for AppSumo.
Ooh.
And,
let's go.
And then the one that I've never really been able to, you know, answer in a clean way is kind of the stuff that I started doing with Noah. I think at one point we were calling me like, director of the operations or producer of the channel or whatnot, but I don't know. It was always kind of loose with terms there, and more so just like, okay, you could call yourself whatever you want to do. Just like let's just make sure we're aligned towards the goal and like get moving.
Yep, totally. You're the guy that just makes stuff happen around the channel. I put out a an Instagram story. I said producer. I feel like there's like tons of hats that you cover with that role. Like even like looking in from the outside, I'm curious. One, like first, let's give people before we kind of go into how you got the job. Can you give a little context around who Noah is and what AppSumo is?
Yeah, sure. So Noah is one of these, like, I don't know, serial founder type guys. He was number 30 at Facebook, number 4 at Mint, and then has started like 20 some companies along the way. Majority of them didn't work out. One worked out quite well, which was AppSumo, and AppSumo is a digital marketplace for entrepreneurs. So two sides of the marketplace. You got, you know, just like Amazon, but just for entrepreneurs, products for entrepreneurs. And that sort of thing. And he started it like 11 years ago. And dude, it's just grown like crazy, especially these last couple of years.
It's grown like crazy. I've been following Noah ever since his blog with Tim Ferriss. I don't know when he did that, 2011 maybe? And 2012, I don't know. I remember one of his first videos on the YouTube channel. He's like on he's on like the street, like telling people how to do sales, I think, or like it's just like a one take video into his cell phone. And I could tell, like I'm, man, video is powerful. I'm like, oh, this guy's cool. Like I can get behind this character here. Like, you know, I just love the rawness of that video. Now this is dope because now you're working. You got all these different angles of the, you know, this show is called Creators Are Brands. You work with someone who is a founder, who is also a creator. And then now you're in a position where you are doing outreach and connecting with creators for AppSumo. So like you're kind of like right in the middle of everything here. That's exciting. How did you get into this world?
How did I get into this world? Great question. So it's one of those things, dude. It sounds cliche, the sort of like, oh, you can't connect the dots looking forward, only backwards sort of thing. And I've heard that a lot, but after kind of going through it, I'm like, oh, okay, I think I know what they're talking about here. And so the brief version is, I had a job I was doing financial software at this company in Chicago, was, doing that. It was cool on paper, it looked cool, but it just, like, when I'm really honest with myself and sort of like, that's, has been a big thing for me of like, Ray Dalio calls it radical transparency. Right. And so, I'm not fooling anyone else. I just didn't want to be doing that. So it's like, all right, cool. Made my way down to Austin. And at that point was really just trying to, think through like, okay, what do I want to do next? I had this like almost strange kind of calling to move to Austin. So ended up doing that, ended up quitting the job, my previous job before I moved here, just to kind of, do it on my terms, and was actively not looking for a job for 2 months. And so at that point it was like, oh, okay, like I could do anything I want. This is like a pretty empowering period of my life. And so it was awesome. I basically was doing a lot of the things I do still currently of, reading a bunch of books, listening to podcasts, letting myself go down these rabbit holes. And so that's when I got really interested in online marketing, entrepreneurship, those sorts of things. A buddy of mine had a software business down here. We started doing some marketing stuff, and then we started a marketing agency, started a company together. And then on the side, I was just always volunteering, just giving back has always been a big part of my life. So started doing that kind of on the side with a few organizations. And then around this time period, Noah, I think on his podcast, maybe he was talking about doing this charity bike race. And so I hit him up and sent him an email. It was actually an email that he had sent out. And so I replied to his newsletter being like, I'd love to give you, if you're looking for help getting sponsors, like happy to help. And so long story short, did that, got a lot of sponsors, had a dope event, raised a bunch of money. And he's like, yo, you should come join us. And that's pretty much what happened.
That's amazing, man. I love that story, because I feel like a lot of people, as they're listening to this show, a lot of people are like kind of in between, like they have a full-time job, they're in something that they don't entirely love, they want to explore getting in and or around this creator space, or just like in something else that's they're more excited about. And so like that's why I thought it was important to share that story. The other thing I want to highlight that I think is cool, and I'm seeing this more and more, is that creators or entrepreneurs are, a lot of them are hiring people that are like already fans of their product. Like people are landing jobs through other people's email lists, just like you landed this one, or like an Instagram story, or, it's a non-traditional route. Did you ever in your like experience with Noah, like have to show him your like degree or anything like that,
No, dude, I don't think he even really knew where I was from for the first like 4 months.
He just saw that you delivered.
Yeah, exactly. And it's really kind of like this, the amazing sort of environment that we're in right now, where it's like, the old school approach is kind of this like very, you go to school, you get the degree, you work at a, some company for your career. And it's very much like, what do you have on paper? And then like the hiring process is like, hopefully this person's good. Like on paper, they're cool. But it was just always just like a gamble. Now it's just like, all that stuff doesn't really matter. But like, if you're doing like cool stuff on the internet, or, you're on probably less LinkedIn, but more on like Twitter, or making cool videos, or you have a blog, like you see it, like it's right there. And so I think that it just like lets the real stuff sort of rise to the top, and connecting with people on the internet, it's like one of the coolest things ever.
Dude, you and I connected on the internet. And the way we connected on the internet is by putting out content. I was putting out content, and then you're putting out content, and then we interact through that content. And you mentioned something before the call. Tell me, because so you've been very active on Twitter recently, and then you said something about how you use writing as a way to kind of figure out what it is that you're thinking. Like, how did you word that? I might have just botched that. Can you go into detail about that?
No, that's pretty much it. So I've been interested in writing for a long time and have, kept, I've kept it in Evernote for years. I'll write stuff. I have journals and whatnot. I've played around with poetry, all these things. And have, years ago I had a blog. It was a very small thing, and it got a lot of like really good feedback, from, granted, just friends and families. And it was one of those things that felt like really good and it felt right. But then I just got too busy, stopped doing it. But it was like, okay, cool. Like, note to self, like, revisit this later. And as I was doing it more and more, I found that like the way that I look at it is just like, okay, I do this just for myself. Like, regardless if I publish anything, it helps me, read a book, listen to a podcast, take notes on whatever, synthesize it, understand it, and like put it into my own words. And then also like kind of pattern match too. I have like the way that I set up the Evernote. I took this course called Building a Second Brain, and they talk about digital note taking and all this stuff. So having a good process to capture content that resonates, and then kind of play with it, organize it, distill it, and then ultimately share it and publish it. And then that's how you get like your favorite thoughts out on the internet. And but like outside of any of that, it's like all that stuff is like bonus. We call it bonus footage for you. But
Let's
before that, it's
go.
just like it's a win for me just to understand it and write about it. And then if I happen to connect with people on the internet, it's like, oh, that's great.
And you know what the beauty is that I find that you, because you touched upon it, when you have to formulate an idea in a way that you know that you are going to put it out to the world. It makes you think about it more critically than you would just like, a random thought when you're, going on a stroll. Like you're really like, okay, how do I package this in a way that people are going to receive it? And in the process of doing that, this concept becomes something that like you understand more, right? Like it makes your it, like the whole process of publishing makes your thinking sharper. And then what I've noticed is, and I think like, 'cause I love Seth Godin, who doesn't love Seth Godin? And he's like one of those guys on podcast. He has a story or an anecdote for any question, no matter what, right? And the reason I think he does, has that and is because the guy's been blogging what like for 10,000 days straight, like some ridiculous number. And each day, my hypothesis is every time he writes that and he publishes it, he kind of creates this like file in his file cabinet that he can like revert back to. Like when like, oh, this topic was just like did it like this topic was just like presented to me, like go into the file cabinet, boom, anecdote. And like I'm starting to realize that because I'm publishing a lot now, a couple times a day, certain days. But it's making me better in podcast interviews or being just off the cuff, just like having conversations with people about insights that I'm learning because I've had to internalize them and put them out, and then like I got them in my filing cabinet for when those topics come up. Would you agree? How do you feel about that?
Dude, 1,000%. So, James Clear talks about the same thing of like, how he just appears smart is he started writing about the very, very smallest things, possible.
What he knew right in front of him.
Right. It's like, oh, here's a story about I think it's called like the Ivy method of productivity. It's like, okay, I can do that. And then like, it's a short blog post. And then he could talk about whatever else story. And so then he's going on podcast, or he's writing a chapter of his book, or out and about in a conversation, he's like, oh yeah, that reminds me of this. And it's just a small tidbit, but he never would have been able to recall that had he not like not just wrote it down, but really played with it and press publish, because that's
And
that forcing
publish it.
function to sort of do it. And like I think there's all sorts of examples, like Neil was it Neil deGrasse Tyson, that like astrophysicist dude. He said before that he's never said anything publicly that he's never written down before. So in other words, he writes everything down, and then he kind of like it plays with the idea, and then he's like, oh, okay, I could bring that on a show, or I could do that. And so I think it shows up a lot.
That's smart. I gotta pay attention to that. Sometimes after these podcast interviews, I'm like, "What the heck did I just say?" So like, this is cool because this kind of tees it up to sort of where I want to go with this. You put together your thoughts around the previous couple of years working with Noah and working at AppSumo, and having one, I know that you're a just working with you already in the last couple of months, getting to know you, I know you're a very observant, you're a very capable dude. Like, you get the job done. You're a bright dude. Like, I'm excited to continue to work on ideas with you. Like, you're a really bright mind. But then also the experience of being around someone like Noah, being around a company that does what, 100 million in sales a year. Like, that's like, there's so many people that like would be like, okay, package that experience, that those 2 years of experience for me, and put them in a tweet thread. And good thing for us, you did that. And so what I want to do is I want to highlight some of the points. Tell me a little bit about like the that tweet thread that you did. And if you want to follow Mitchell, it's Mitchell Landon at Mitchell Landon on Twitter. He just put a tweet thread. Talk about this specific tweet thread where it kind of recaps your previous 2 years of working.
Yeah, so I've thought about it for a little bit, like back to like the note taking and capture system. As things would come up, I'd be like, that's interesting. Throw
Just
it in
put
my
it down.
Evernote, and then keep on coming along. And then it's like, oh, that's interesting. All these little things that, like, again, no intention of publishing back then, and more so of just like I want to capture it for myself. And then once I started to see the pattern, I was like, oh, this is actually pretty cool. Might as well share it. And then again, going back to like, okay, if I'm going to publish it, like, what are the best things that I've learned over the last couple of years, and like what is the best way to present that that's not just like, yo, here's a listicle, seven things, eight things, go read it. And so like one of the things I think about is I'm fresh out of this writing cohort, and so that's why I'm like probably extra into writing right now. But overall, I'm very like pro writing for pretty much anyone out there, whether they want to publish or not. But in the writing cohort, it's called Rite of Passage, like WRITE, by David Perel. And like super impressed with David and the whole team, and like really the community about writing that they're putting out. And anyway, so like one of the things in Rite of Passage is he talks about pop writing, which pop is just an acronym. So like POP, make it playful, make it write from observations, and make it personable. So that's a POP. And like again, it's one of those things like, oh yeah, cool, sounds nice. But until you sort of sit down and start to like formulate your thoughts and be like, okay, is this an observation of mine? Is it playful? Is it personal? Like all these things. And then like you share that with other people in the writing cohort. You get like real-time feedback on your Google Doc. You start to see kind of what resonates. And so I think that in any creative process, having just a system for like, yo, okay, I'm accountable to publish, one a week. And also I have this system to like hop on a Zoom call once a week with Tom and like talk about, the video or talk about the writing, whatever the creative thing is. And so, there's nothing, you could do all the research you want, but like there's nothing better than getting a rep at the thing and like seeing it through. And so that's why I think that the writing has been especially useful for me.
Amazing. So, you put together this thread. I'd love to go through some of these main points that you've learned in the last 2 years that you already organized for us. And before we get into it, it's funny. So, like, you know me from the shorts that I make on bonus footage and for the TikTok and the Instagram. My priority right now is scaling the TikTok because that's where I'm seeing the most like the best. It's resonating the most on that platform. And I realized recently that TikTok is more Twitter than it is Instagram or YouTube. And hear me out. It's the people that create like so Twitter is like kind of an ongoing dialogue that you create with your community. And that's the same, that's similar, that's like the same thing for TikTok with the duets, with the stitches, with the trends, with like what's everyone talking about today. It's very less like YouTube is like I make this video to stand alone and it's like this one moment, right? But TikTok is a very much an ongoing conversation that you, like is just like a living and breathing thing, right? So with that, I'm just kind of like, this is an observation I've made recently that I treat my TikTok more like Twitter than it is like YouTube. And it's just like the video version for me, because that's where I specialize in like on-camera communication. So that's where I'm going to post up. With that, I also follow a lot of David, it's David Perel, David Perel and Dickie Bush and Nicholas Cole's content around writing, and I find probably 100% of what they're talking about with writing for Twitter applies to making TikTok videos for me. Like I filter like the ideation process, like what makes for a good concept, like how to deliver it in simple terms. Like I gain, like I have like just tweet threads saved and screenshotted, and I kind of filter my ideas through a lot of their principles.
Yeah, and you know, and by the way, it's like you know, you're talking about it for TikTok, but like, you know, take, you know, email marketing or something where it's just like, oh, you gotta come up with that really good subject so you get the open rate and a really good, you know, the first sentence is
Watch
designed.
the whole thing.
So you know, you read the second sentence, same thing. It's like you know, how do you come up with the best ideas and package them in a way that's most presentable to the audience? And and I think like all the different mediums, you know, different ones play with other creators, but behind all of them, it's like have a good writing process, and chances are you're going to do whichever one a lot better.
Yep, exactly. So cool. I'm glad that you're sharing your thoughts because you know, we're getting a lot of insight as we're reading them. So the first one on this thread, and sort of the backstory is this is kind of high level stuff that you've learned working with Noah and Napsuma for the previous 2 years. The first one is prioritize now, not how. Can we peel that one back a little bit? Prioritize now, not how.
Yeah, man. So I think I was running one day a few months ago, and I was just kind of thinking of like, oh, I was noticing something that like I used to always want to like, you know, research the thing first and read a book and, you know, take a course on the thing and then actually do it. Whereas
call 20 people.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then I noticed like working with Noah or observing and studying some of these other like, you know, impressive, whether entrepreneurs or just impressive people, it's like they're constantly just doing the thing right away and getting real time feedback. And that feedback is better than like any sort of research or book or whatever that I could have come up with. So like I played with the idea. I was journaling on it one day, probably, you know, 6 months ago. And then I found myself just revisiting it like all the time, and it was useful. So whether it's like, you know, coming up with you know a new article to publish, or it's like, oh yeah, I should write something about that, blah, blah, blah. It's like, no, just like if I want to do it, just do it now. Like, don't worry about like, oh, I need to wait for it to be perfect and like a better title and whatever. This is like having the kind of the operating system be more towards now and less about the how. It's been helpful for me.
Dude, I feel like that might be the title of your first book. Now, not how. I feel it. Let's go. When you do drop it, I want to be the first podcast you do the interview on for your podcast circuit. Once you do that,
dude, if you'll have me, yeah.
I might be too big at that time, but we'll see. No, I'm kidding. Okay, the second one is because I love these. When I read this, I was like, yes, I resonate with this. I want to like, this is the tip of the iceberg. Let's talk about how this shows up in your day to day. So test, not invest. That's number two. And you say it's a core saying at AppSumo, and AppSumo is a very successful company. So like, how does this show up at AppSumo? This phrase of test, not invest.
Yeah.
Test, then invest.
Yeah, so it's constantly Jim Collins has a thing of like first firing small bullets and then you fire the whole cannon because you kind of want to get aligned. Similar sort of concept where it's basically so an example, you know, if we're hiring a new teammate, rather than just be like, all right, cool, you're hired. It's like we'll do a paid trial at first for a month. Sometimes not even a paid trial, depending on the position or whatnot. But, you know, at least a month, sometimes longer than that. And so it's like, all right, we're testing it first. And then if it's a great fit, then we invest to you know, bring them on full time. Same with just like testing software. And I found too, it gives you a little leverage when talking with contractors or we signed up for this influencer marketing software and they're like, I got a free trial. And then they're like, all right, we only do one year contracts. Minimums, just because, you know, it's kind of like a heavier lift for them to onboard an integration. I was like, oh man, kind of a company thing is test and invest. So we don't do 1 year, like right out of the gate. How about we do like a 4 month thing? And so they're like, oh, we'll have to ask. And so like, you know, they made it happen. And
they'll
so,
figure it out. Yeah.
Yeah. and so we did the thing. And then like, it's better for, you know, all parties for the most part. It's just like, yo, test it out real quick. Because at the end of the day, it forces you to move quicker, right? Rather than just going all in on something, hoping it works.
Definitely, definitely. I'm guessing that's probably how, no, you got the job. Like you kind of just probably started with some smaller projects that turned into more of the full-time role that you're in right now.
Yeah, exactly. So I still had the agency when I first started working with Noah, and then was just doing this, working with him part time, and then it quickly was scaling up. And at the end of the year, he's like, "Yo, I appreciated how he presented it. He's like, do whatever you want to do, but like, why don't you come full time and like, let's really blow this thing up." So
Yeah.
yes, another example right there.
And that goes right into the next one of having one clear goal. How does having one clear goal show up in how you guys approach the YouTube channel?
Yeah, so at first, like, it very much was a test then invest thing. Like, even me in general, he was explaining, he's like, "Yo, like, I'm not like hiring for this position. I'm just trying to figure out a way to like make this work. Like, we worked well together. I want to figure something out." And so like, there's never a title for the role or anything. And so at first, we're just looking at this like total audience metric of like literally just had a Google sheet just aggregating. YouTube subs, LinkedIn following, organic Google traffic to the blog, all the socials. And then we're like, okay, this is cool, but it's like very uncontrollable. And like, what even is the goal? And so it wasn't until the next year we're like, all right, let's pick one clear goal. And then we chose YouTube because we thought that was the best chance to grow the quickest. And at that point I was like, okay, we don't have to like worry about all these other things. We could actually use these other things and point them towards our goal. And then all the decision making is so much easier. It's like, okay, does this help our goal? If yes, then great, let's do it and prioritize it. If not, then like, nope, we're not gonna do that.
So is there no like right now, like TikTok doesn't make any like because it says on your thread, TikTok's a no-go. And that's because the blinders are on. There's a specific goal on YouTube, and TikTok doesn't play into that. Can you go into that a little bit? Because what the reason the context behind it is, I think it's fascinating that someone like Noah that obviously has more resources than most like just creators off the street, right? Is saying no, I'm going all in on one platform and getting that one where it needs to be, instead of trying to spread himself thin and be everywhere. Is that sort of his thinking around it, where it's like dominate one and then, we'll revisit the other platforms in the future?
For the most part, yeah, it's like, we could get very scattered and do a lot of things, good or pretty good, or we could just be way more focused and try to do that thing great. But again, back to like the test and invest, like, there very well might be a time where we test out, two or three TikToks and be like, oh, this is actually working, let's do more of that. Or like, oh, do we need to realign the goal based on new information? So it's not like we're so stuck and like, oh, well, we said the goal 8 months ago, so we have to stick with that. Definitely want to build room for like reevaluating.
And I honestly, I think that's the angle that I take. Like at the beginning, I tested with YouTube Shorts, with Reels, with TikTok. And then once I saw it, most of my content resonating on TikTok, I was like, okay, this is where I'm going to channel my ideas. Because as a solo creator, each platform is different. You need to learn who's on the platform, how they're responding, how they're engaging, what type of content's working. Like, there's so many things that are so nuanced to this specific platform that as a solo creator without a team, it's hard to master all of them. And the analogy I think about a lot is like, when you think of Casey Neistat, what do you think of? YouTube.
Video, you do,
Yeah,
yeah.
YouTube video. And like, he would post random stuff to Snapchat, to Twitter, to Instagram, but he was optimizing for one platform. And if he didn't do that, we probably wouldn't know who he, like he'd be cool, but he wouldn't be the star that he is today if he didn't go all in on that one platform.
Totally, yeah. And I mean, it's having a team and resources and all that, it applies, but especially to the solo creator and solopreneur of like. Man, there are just so many ways to get like caught in the details of these things of like, oh, how do I edit this or what's the website or all this stuff. So it's like it's even more important, I think, to just be like, all right, test a bunch of things and be like, okay, now I'm going here and this is what I'm going to try to optimize for.
And then the next one, like we know with we Honestly, I like the flow here because it lines up perfectly. You talk about how saying no, becoming a no man rather than a yes man, is when you became the most valuable to the team. Can you tell me why saying no is the way to go?
Yeah, man. I mean, I'll be honest. The first like several months were pretty tough. It's 'cause
Because
like
you were
we
just taking on a lot. You were just doing
yeah
anything
yeah
that was thrown your way.
exactly. Like I was still having the other business as like kind of the main thing, and then also just like doing whatever. We'd have these weekly meetings with Noah, just him and I, and we'd talk about all this stuff. And I'm like, okay, yeah, I'll just go do all that. And then after a while, it's like.
Yeah, I'll do all that. I've been there, bro. I've been there, bro. I love it though.
And I mean, maybe there's an argument to be like, okay, like to do that and just to, kind of build some trust and accountability and all that. But then at the end of the day, it's like, all right, let's get clear on the goal, and then let's get very clear on what are the levers we can pull that really align towards that goal. So like basically whenever you have data to present, to be like, yo, this is working. And so, your other idea over here, like, all ideas are good ideas, when we're whiteboarding them, but we're not going to do those. We're just going to do more of this. And then that's when, kind of the dynamic of the relationship changed, where it's just like, oh, okay, yeah, that you're right. Let's just do more of that.
Now, I think you make a good point. Sort of at the beginning, it's not a bad idea to say yes to things, because you're still in the space where you're trying to figure out what you like to do, what you're good at, what is effective, what you're getting results for. And then as you start to, get that real-time feedback, then you can get that information to apply to the things that you want to start saying yes and no to. So like maybe at the beginning, if you're just starting out, like kind of just take on opportunities and experience when they come at you, then you can start refining.
Yeah, 100%. Starting out, it's like you have way more time than you do opportunity. So you're just like, oh yeah, I'll do this thing, whatever. And then you just get used to that. Then at a certain point, that inverts, right? So you have more opportunity than you have time, and then you have to start making real decisions. And I think it could go through cycles too, where it's just like, kind of in a rut right now. Like I want to make some things happen. I really like the phrase impatient with actions, patient with results. And so it's like, as you're going through this stuff and be like, okay, like I'm gonna try this. Like this seems cool, whether that means hopping on Twitter, whether that means publishing a thread, maybe that means just like hopping on a Zoom call with somebody, whatever it is, just like doing a bunch of things, just like be in motion. And then another thing I think about is like just in life in general is like, how do I increase the surface area for serendipity in my life? And one of the ways to do that, it's like, use it with leverage of say like media hopping on this podcast. And like, but before this, it was like you and me just jamming out like on some calls, right? And so I think you just have to, you never really know where it's gonna go, but you just sort of be like, oh, this is interesting. I'm gonna go do this thing. Which actually reminds me of one of the pieces of content that you put out that I loved, was the watermelon seeds. Do you remember that? Dude, I think that was
Serendipity.
and so like your thing was, I mean, maybe you say it, but like my recollection of it was like you were playing, with a friend or something. You were spitting these watermelon seeds out of the back. And like one of the moms, your mom or his, was like, yo, like stop doing that. And you're like, like okay. But then you just kept doing it because it was just fun. And then like later it sprouts to be this like whole garden of watermelon. And it is just like, oh, you would have never like thought to plant that. So I thought that was a fun story that you put out because it's so spot on.
I'm gonna bring it back into the tweet, right? Because it's epic. What's working and how can we do more of it? And the example that you use is yoga for complete beginners. How does a yoga channel have anything to do with Noah Kagan's business channel?
Okay, so first off, the I can't tell you how many meetings with Noah I would be in, and like regardless of whatever we're talking about, he'd just be like, yo, like what's working, and like how do we do more of it? It's it like it like it like almost annoyingly so, where it's like, okay, I know that question is coming, and so like I'm constantly always looking like if we could have data for our own stuff to see like, okay, this is working, maybe we do a variation of that. But almost better than that is borrowing from other industries, like completely different ones. So the yoga with Adrienne example I point out with the screenshot of her channel is, she's got a huge channel, I think like 10 million plus subs on YouTube. She crushes. She's actually here in Austin as well. And her number one video is not like, made for these expert yogis or anything. It is it's titled something like Yoga for Complete Beginners. And
Yep.
so I remember seeing that and be like, huh, that's interesting. And then being like, all right, what is how do we pull that into our world of entrepreneurship, right? And so we tested ideas of like, scaling your business and doing this and that and email marketing and blah blah. And it was like, okay, what if we pull back, more for beginners and then just do something on like business ideas. And those that series ends up being like one of our most popular series and blows up and
Yeah.
people love it.
That's amazing. I love that. Yeah, man, it's stealing from other industries, seeing what's working and why it's working. I like to do that on my Instagram. I like to compare two people in different industries, and be like, what are they doing that's similar? And then like, I'm trying to distill this information to like how I can apply it to my work. Now, in that you're like you're testing and you're experimenting, and you talk about the feedback, the gift of feedback. Now, is this feedback from like the internet saying like, how many likes per video, or is this feedback from real time people telling you that your breath smells or whatever?
I suppose it could
Or
be both,
both.
but
Yeah,
more the
yeah,
latter, more the latter.
yeah.
And
Okay.
so like kind of, you only learn and grow through like doing the thing and then getting feedback from the thing, whether that's like audience feedback or whatnot. But what I was pointing out here is more so feedback within the team and whatnot. So we have this like quarterly check-in with that we give each other feedback. But we also have a rule where it's like, yo, let's not wait a quarter to tell each other, how to improve. Let's have a rule for real-time feedback. And so back to like that radical transparency thing of like early on, it was like, yo, we both want to improve for sure. And so like, cool, we're not, our feelings aren't going to be hurt if you point out something. And so let's just have a process of real-time feedback. And so I think that's important for any team.
The last one on the thread is make it fun. And I love that. I love that you included that. That was sort of something that you talked about in like in writing in general, the POP, like having it be playful. Tell me about you talk about how the meetings are it's rare to literally not LOL in a meeting. Like what's the setup of a meeting and what makes them so fun? I'm curious because a lot of people at their jobs, they don't feel like their meetings are fun. So I'm curious like what people can adopt from this in order to make their meetings a little more fun.
Yeah, so and to be clear, every minute of every meeting is not fun. And every meeting and every meeting itself is not fun. But the vast majority of them, they'll be like, well, yeah, like I said, you'll laugh and it's just funny. It's like kind of hanging out with like one of your boys where it's like you're not going to filter anything you say. And especially if there's an opportunity to make a joke, like you're going to make the joke, even if it's ridiculous.
Yep.
So I don't know. I feel like examples are always better. And I think he'd be okay with this. But I don't know. Like we use the pepper emoji when we're talking video ideas in our Google Docs. We'll use the pepper emoji if we like a video, if it's like a good spicy video. Noah, I remember early on, he uses the eggplant emoji for like as we're going through the Google Doc in a separate meeting. It was like, oh. That one gets him excited, and so when you see a bunch of eggplants, he's excited. But it could take form of something as simple as that, or it's just like, yo, like all of our energy is kind of off. Let's do like 30 push-ups, and then and like loosen up the energy, and then always mixing it up and like inserting humor wherever possible.
I love that. So this whole thread is on Mitchell's Twitter. You got to go check out the entire thing. I want to talk about, and then we'll wrap it up. You've learned a lot about YouTube in the last 2 years. Now, my question is making jumping over 100,000 subscribers on YouTube. It's not like TikTok, or it's not like, it's not easy to just do that overnight. Like you really got to build a YouTube brand that allows a creator to do that. If you were to start from scratch right now on YouTube, what are like the 3 to 5 things that you would that would be top of mind that you would like have to have down to be able to start this channel?
So starting from scratch with no videos, no channel at all.
Yes.
So I'll answer that, and then I'll answer that maybe in a different way too for people who might not be starting from scratch. So starting from scratch, like, dude, and it's the answer nobody wants to hear, but it's like, it's just one of those things that it is what it is. And it's just like, almost don't even look at the metrics for the first, you know, some people might say, no, it talks about the law of 100, like just do 100 of them. I'd argue you could look at the metrics before that and just kind of, you're constantly seeing like, oh, okay, maybe this video pops more, so I'll do another one. But again, you're not overthinking it. You're just like building the muscle of just like output, and do that 100 times. I think Ali Abdaal says the same thing of just like, you know, a lot of people say your first ones are going to suck, and that's okay. You're just getting it out there. But then it's like, oh, you got this thing down, and then you start to double down, triple down on the ones that are really working. So for that creator, I would say, you know, now you're at the point where you kind of know how to put out a video, and like, by the way, for the first 100, like it could be on the phone, it could be whatever. Like again, yeah. I would use the now, not how sort of framework. And, and then you're trying to figure out what's working. It's again, kind of like what we were talking about earlier with like, how do you make a fire hook, or, you know, the best subject line for an email, or, you know, the best intro for the YouTube video. And that, you know, for our process, it looks just like a giant Google Doc that we go into weekly, and we source ideas from ourselves and from others of like, you know, we could do just a regular, you know, whatever we're feeling that week for a video, or we could put a lot more thought into the actual idea itself and what the title and thumbnail will be, and then make the video. And so again, if you're a solopreneur doing it on your own, you can't spend all that time doing it. So I'd prioritize just getting the output. But yep. As you're starting to think a little more strategically, spending a lot more time on the title and thumbnail on YouTube. And I think that will end up being a game changer.
Gold. Absolutely gold. Is there like a length of video, a length of time that you guys go for on YouTube?
Yeah, we've played around with different ones. We try now for over 10 minutes-ish. But, you know, there's the whole argument for, you know, banging out a bunch of shorts and just constant videos that you're uploading, versus more of like the Mr. Beast of like only do a banger and it's okay to wait in between. So I'd say just whatever like system you're good with sort of sticking to is best.
This has been a rad conversation. Are there the one subject that I think that we could maybe save it for the next episode is kind of going into how you're working with creators at AppSumo. Because like that's an exciting topic. Maybe we can touch high level right now. Like, how are you working with creators at AppSumo?
Yeah, so we're working with, like, it started out sort of working with just some of the relationships that that Noah has, an extension of his network, and then some that I have. And then looking, you know, bigger picture of our big thing is like, how do we enable and empower entrepreneurship for, like, you know, anyone? And so, you know, sure, that's people who are already doing it, but then, you know, we launched this $1 million Black Friday fund where we took our whole marketing budget, and rather than spending it on our marketing to say, hey, go buy products from us, we're giving it away to creators to go list their products on AppSumo. So it makes, you know, myself, like, employees are allowed to do it too. So like, I'm working on this like productivity habit checklist thing. I know some other people are having products too. So it's like all these as far as the creators go, it's like there are some awesome creators out there doing really cool things. And we want to kind of partner with the ones who sort of have a really authentic, like genuine relationship with their audience. And and like if they have a digital product too, that's great. That's kind of what we're prioritizing. But basically, I like to look at like inversion for a lot of things. And so when I first approached like the influencer marketing thing, I was thinking like, okay, what would be the worst way to approach this? Like the worst way to approach it is like, okay, we're very particular with the brand, and it has to be like them read a script, and then it's like there's a lot of back and forth, and it's very transactional of like, yep, you do this, and then I was like, oh, we don't approve that, and it's just an ad read. I was like, okay, how do we do the opposite of that? And then it's just like, oh, we just partner with dope creators and say, hey, here's like loosely a few bullet points of what we're doing, but we trust you to talk to your audience however you want to. So here's some money, and here's a UTM link. Go talk about AppSumo however you want. And we found a lot of success so far with that. So trying to do more of it.
Dude, I love that. I love that strategy because I feel like the creators that you're working with, especially, they probably have freaking crappy experiences with brands, like kind of like over their shoulder, like dictating like all the creative direction for everything. And all this is going to do is want them to work with you more in the future and like build that relationship with you. And I will tell you that campaign that you guys have done is brilliant. I actually did it, and the beauty is like you list a product to the store, and you get you like it gives you that initial boost of like okay yeah like it's like let's do it, let's see what can happen. You guys pay the creator money like a part of the giveaway, but then the real magic happens. You start to see your product actually get sales, and then you're like, wait, like my idea this. I'm selling air right now, you know, like, and I'm not even doing anything. And like, it starts to show the magic of AppSumo as a creator, which I think is like the most brilliant play to invest that money. Because once the creator feels that, what are they going to do? They're going to want to tell their friends about it, and they're going to want to make more products.
Yeah, totally, dude. And I mean, it's kind of wild of like the $1,000 to the first, I think it was like 400 people, and then 250 bucks to the rest, and then randomly we're selecting just 10 people to win $10,000. And so it's wild to kind of come from
Dude,
like, okay,
it's wild. People
idea.
don't think it's real. People think it's like, they're like, what's going on
I know. So hopefully,
here?
well, it seems to be working. So like, again, it's like kind of putting
It is
yourself
real though, right? It's real.
it is real. You got paid, didn't you?
I got paid. I got my
Nice,
cheddar.
nice. I still need to list mine, so hopefully they don't run out.
Yo, bro, this was so much fun, man. Where can people go check out more of your ideas, or where can they go reach out to you at?
Yeah, I think the Twitter plug was good at Mitchell Landon on Twitter, and also mitchelllandon.com is where my blog is, where I kind of think about a lot of these stuff. So I wrote a full post about that, and then I just sort of cherry picked my favorites for that Twitter thread.
My man, thanks for being on the show.
Dude, always a blast talking with you, Tom. Thanks for having me.